Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.
Is America a great country or what, Paul Meyerberg? And I'm not talking about the midterms. I'm not talking about Democrats. I'm not talking about Republicans, Senate races, governor's races. I'm not talking about any of that. Do you know why America is such a great country? Because some...
We're talking about the Knowles.
Because some guy who looks like a dorky math teacher, who's 15 and 17 as a head coach, just got a $2 million a year raise to coach the Missouri Tigers. I'm talking about Eli Drinkwitz. Missouri, what are you doing?
$4 million to $6 million for Eli Drinkwitz. They almost, can we say they almost beat Georgia this year? They've actually done the best job of playing Georgia this
season. Well, that's like...
So as I'm thinking about that, you're like, okay, give them $2 million just for playing Georgia tight. Like, they almost beat Georgia. Give them a couple.
That's like me saying I'm almost 6 feet.
Well, I mean, what's closer? You to 6 feet, Missouri beating Georgia. We'll leave. We won't. I think, welcome to the year 2022 in America. You're going to get rich. Like, if you're rich already, you're just going to get richer and richer and richer. And Eli Drinkwitz, I mean, I imagine for him, he wasn't like, no, thank you. Don't give me an extra $2 million. But he might have left that room and been like, whoa, what just happened here? I gotta call my wife. This thing's just got crazy here. But it's a great time to be a football coach, Dan. We talk about it all the time. $6 million, 15 and 17, second to last in the SEC East. Generational wealth for doing so.
Yeah, we're recording this podcast on Wednesday morning, and it just popped up in my feed before we started. From Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Eli Drinkwitz. Extension was announced, by the way, before they lost to Kentucky last weekend. Memo to athletics directors out there who are listening, do not announce your contract extension before the game. That doesn't work out very well. That's not a good move, because then you're going to lose, and then your fans are going to be all up on the message boards roasting you for giving out a contract extension. Do it quietly. Do it in the middle of the night. Do it, you know, at the end of the season or whatever. Like if you're Missouri, and I know we got a lot more important things to talk about than Missouri's football coach, but I just don't understand, like, running out there before a game saying, hey, we just extended the contract of Eli Drinkwitz. Five more years. And then you go lose to Kentucky. Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't do that. If I mean, I would just pay cash and I would not tell anybody. I mean, I know that's against the law, but that's what I would do. The last thing I want to do is get roasted online. I mean,
well, that's why you're not really on Twitter. That's why you're not on Twitter anymore.
Exactly. Just keep me out of that. But 15 and 17, not even 17 and 15, 15 and 17.
All right. We got a lot to talk about here with the college football playoff. The new rankings came out last night. No surprise, Georgia is back at number one, where they belong, where they should be. Number two is Ohio State. Number three is Michigan. TCU into the top four. Tennessee is out of the top four, but they're sitting there at number five. Oregon up to number six, and LSU in there at number seven. Interesting discussion last night on Twitter about LSU, and I am shocked, I say, at the pushback I got to what seems rather obvious to me, which is that if LSU runs the table, they've still got to play Arkansas and Texas A&M, games they're going to be favored in, and then in the SEC championship game beats Georgia to go 11-2, they're going to be in the college football playoff as the first two-loss team. Like, I don't really see any argument against that. Do you?
The SEC champion is never getting left out of the playoff. I mean, they never will, starting very soon, but they were never going to get left out of the 14 playoff whatsoever, especially when you think about an 11-2 LSU would have wins against three teams currently in the top nine of the playoff rankings. No.
Well, Ole Miss, Alabama.
Right? Ole Miss, right, so top 10. Top 11.
Ole Miss, Alabama, and Georgia. They're getting in if they win those. If they win these last games.
Right.
I mean, look, I don't know. Like, I understand that they got their ass kicked by Tennessee at home, and Tennessee would have one loss versus LSU's two. But like you said, like, unless the SEC had a champion that was kind of a fluke deal and it was like an 8-4 team or something that was a 30-point underdog in the championship game and somehow won, the SEC champion's getting in. LSU's going to jump Tennessee if that happens. I'm sorry.
I mean, LSU's getting in and Georgia's getting in and maybe even Tennessee's getting
in. Possible. It's not out of the question.
We think, I believe that we agree, LSU could lose either one of these last two games. I really believe that. Maybe not A&M, but they could definitely lose to Arkansas. I mean, this is not like a juggernaut LSU team. This isn't 2019. But we have to admit and like accept the fact, especially if you're from outside of SEC country, if they're 11-2, they're just going to get it. Let's just forget it. Just forget it. If they're 11-2, they're getting it. And the way they're playing, maybe they could run the table. Seems unlikely, but it's definitely possible. They've got something going.
All right, let's talk about just the state of play here. And let's loop it back into what we saw last weekend. Georgia, number one, they had what I called on the field when I was talking to some other reporters. I was there in Athens as they beat Tennessee. I said it was probably the most lopsided two-touchdown win in the history of college football. Like, it just never at any point in that game, except for maybe like the first 3 minutes when Georgia fumbled and Tennessee got that extra possession and kicked a field goal, it never felt like Tennessee was going to win that game. And it honestly could have been a lot worse. I think Georgia geared it down. I know. Like, they had the lead at halftime, sizable lead. It started raining. It was pouring, actually, in the third quarter. And Kirby Smart went back to his Alabama DNA, his Nick Saban DNA, and just said, yeah, we're done here. We're not going to do anything more here. We're just going to bleed this thing dry. Tennessee got one touchdown back, and so it was a two-score game. But I think two things are true at once. First of all, it exposed that Tennessee is just not on that level talent-wise. Like, it's been an amazing season, great run, awesome offense, Hendon Hooker having an unbelievable year, Jalin Hyatt, all these guys. But, like, Georgia's a program that's been recruiting at a crazy high level for six years, and that's what you get when you do that. That's the kind of performance you can get. And Tennessee has been basically a dysfunctional mess, and they're getting a lot out of the guys they have, but they are not 2019 LSU talent-wise. I'm sorry. They're just not.
Oh, gosh, no.
And and that was obvious in that game. I don't think there's too much to analyze other than just Georgia's better. But I also think everyone just sort of anointing Georgia as they're just going to cruise to the national title. I don't think that's really true either. Like, I do think that there's still some, I wouldn't say even warts, but I'm not like they can't lose. That's not where I am with Georgia. They're good. I think they're probably going to win the national championship, but I don't think it's one of those situations where they just can't lose.
I think they're going to cruise to the national championship game. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to cruise in November.
They're going to win the SEC title.
If they played LSU and they cared, unlike kind of like last year, they would destroy LSU. And if they get matched up with TCU, it's...
What if they get matched up again with Tennessee and it would be in Atlanta in the Peach Bowl?
Georgia by 14.
Say, it's just a replay of the same game.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it in person, but even on TV, it is so clearly evident that for all the schematic advantage that Josh Heupel has given Tennessee in terms of being unique, not unique, but in terms of maximizing what they have, these are two different programs, two different teams operating on two different levels. It's older brother, little brother, and it's not like by a year. It's like 7-year gap. It's a profound difference. I don't think Tennessee on any day, on 99 out of 100 days is going to have what it takes man up against Georgia to beat that Georgia team. So I think Georgia cruises to the national championship game. Yeah, but it's like we can't say at this point that Georgia's unstoppable or unbeatable. I know we want to, but I still think Ohio State, like in that really short amount of time, in a 15-minute chunk, is the best team in the country because they can really turn on like a gear that I haven't seen anyone else do. I think Michigan's really good. Maybe. Probably not, but maybe. So let's pump the brakes a bit. Georgia, very, very impressive. And there's no doubt, I mean, at least in our poll and also in the playoff rankings, they're number one. And they've earned it.
So it was interesting after the game, going down to the press conference, Kirby Smart just kept talking over and over and over again about the buy-in from his defense. And you sort of take that for granted, maybe. Like, yeah, of course, like the coaches are going to have a game plan and they're going to practice it all week. Like, why wouldn't the players buy in? But when you play Tennessee, I think one of the things we've seen throughout the course of the season, like against LSU or against Alabama even, when, you know, they just have like receivers running so open all over the field and just like, how did that happen? Right. Mm-hmm. Part of it is you have to be disciplined. Like you have to, every single play, understand what it is you're doing, understand your assignment, not get caught up in the conflict that Tennessee's offense is trying to put you in. And you just have to say, yeah, if we give up a 7-yard underneath route, that's fine. What we can't do is get burned on the, you know, 50-yard go pattern. And Georgia did that all night long. And, you know, I just think, like, it's not only about personnel. Georgia's got personnel. It's about coaching. And, mm-hmm. you know, we give all the offensive coaches the hype in this era of college football. But damn, man, Kirby Smart is a great defensive coach.
Yeah, I mean, that was a clinic. It's a combination, Dan, of like, I'm not smart enough or educated enough to know this. There seems to be obviously an X's and O's advantage. Like, it's not like take it all away from Kirby Smart. It's not like he's just like putting the 11 best guys on the field. There's an X's and O's aspect of it. But also, I think what I loved about last year's defense was that as great as these individual guys were, and we saw, what, 5 go in the first round, the sum of the parts was so much greater than that. Like, it was about 11 guys operating a high level as one. I think Georgia's defense, if I think back in the last 10 years or so, if I throw out Alabama, the only other defense that operated that way, I think, is Clemson under Venables. But that defense never, no disrespect to the Isaiah Simmons or so of the world, never had Georgia's talent level. It was about finding fits for certain roles. Georgia's just oozing talent. So it's an incredible combination. And like I said, I don't know if anyone other than Ohio State can score on them consistently and make Georgia play a game that they're uncomfortable with, because it's clear that at least in the SEC, maybe Alabama lucks into the SEC championship game and Bryce Young goes crazy, but at least in the SEC, there's no offense that really, if they know how to attack it, they're not capable of doing it. So they're operating on a totally different level. Did it seem that way with your own eyes from 100 feet up, just like watching them operate in space, that it was like this machine of guys just working together like a conveyor belt?
Well, here's what it was like to me. When I saw the interception that Kelee Ringo got, you know the play I'm talking about? I mean, he's basically running down the sideline, and like, you just can't cover a receiver any better than he did. And then he just has a beat on it and gets the interception as if the ball was thrown to him. And that's the kind of thing you just don't see in college football very often. You know, and honestly, he's a guy who people had kind of been down on a little bit Kirby Smart actually said, it was funny, he said in the press conference that Keely Ringo had texted him last Sunday and said, Coach, I want to talk to you. And Kirby was like, what's wrong, man? And he's like, I want number 11. I want number 11. We're talking about Jalin Hyatt. And Kirby's like, yeah, well, that's not really the game plan. And
that's not how this works,
right? Like, I've won a few games as a coach, right? So I'm gonna be the guy who decides who's covering Jalin Hyatt and when. But like he went out there and played, man. And you know, it's and then the second half of that game, like you get into the third quarter and starts raining. And then Georgia just kind of pins their ears back and just starts just coming after Hendon Hooker. And Kirby's out there on the sideline, and they're just running the same thing over and over and over and over again, getting that guy coming off the edge. And they're like, is Tennessee going to stop it? Like, we can't possibly run this again. Oh, yes, we can. Not another time. Yes, we can. Another time? Yes, we can. And they just kept doing it. And I almost felt a little bad for Hendon Hooker at various points in that game because he was getting beat up. But yeah, just impressive. Just impressive stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia's just heads and shoulders above the rest of that conference right now. And a little bit is because, and we'll talk about Alabama, there isn't that foil. We thought Tennessee would be that foil, but that's a 27-13 win that might as well have been.
It could have been 45-13. You
know, yeah, it felt like. And I will give, and like this is worlds colliding, but I will give Boo Corrigan a little bit of credit from last night, who's the committee chair, in that he said, we don't see any difference between 27-13 and 49-3.
Well, and they shouldn't.
Between Oregon. Yeah. They really should. I mean, they're both, one looks worse, both are realistically the same. Game control from start to finish, and no chance of winning. So I give them a little bit of credit for that. It was an ass kicking. And even from 30,000 feet, you recognize there's not a lot of difference between that and what they did to Oregon.
All right, let's talk about Alabama. So 32-31, LSU wins in overtime. Brian Kelly goes for two and gets it. I actually don't think it was that gutsy of a call. Like, everyone's sort of talking about it was such an amazing gutsy call by Brian Kelly. I actually think it was kind of the obvious call because – when you are now in overtime and you have the ball second, with the new rules, if you go into a second overtime, you have to go for two after touchdowns and you get the ball first, right? So mm-hmm. In other words, if he had kicked the extra point and gotten it to a second overtime, then LSU was going to get the ball back right there again immediately. And if they score a touchdown the next time, then they have to go for two by rule. So it's like, why wouldn't you go for two the first time you have it there? That's the first thing. But we've talked about it before. I've said it. This is not a great LSU team, but I always had confidence that Brian Kelly, by the end of the year, was going to get those guys playing good football, that there was going to be an obvious difference in coaching between what you had from Ed Orgeron and Brian Kelly. Like, we've made fun of Brian Kelly. Everyone's made fun of him. I never said he can't coach. I never said, you know, I said, hey, fake accent, like there's going to be like a weird cultural fit here. But I never said it was a bad hire. Like, I always thought that this was going to happen when he got his hands on that kind of talent.
Yeah, we should make that clear. He can't, you know, say étouffée, but he can coach football for sure. That's just, we want to be honest about that. No, I don't think LSU is that good. I don't think they're that good. Like, everything relative. Are they the seventh best team in the country? I don't know if that's the case or not. But they are certainly building the resume to warrant that. And they're also building a case to maybe give Georgia a game in early December. Probably not. I would not have gone for two, Dan. And that's only because I thought with the way that Jaden Daniels had played and the way that they had gotten him free as a runner, that I wasn't as scared of going that, like, offense versus offense, we got to get 25 yards competition. Like, it didn't scare me too much. But like you said, eventually you're going to win on a two-pointer. Why not go for it while the defense is tired? The win itself is not so much about LSU as about Alabama. And I think we should just talk about how Alabama as a team can't win on the road against good teams. They cannot stop committing penalties. They are not good up front. And their receiver core is absolutely atrocious. Just atrocious. It's gone from being like historically good in the COVID year to pretty darn good with Williams last year to just being non-existent. It's a lot like Clemson, but almost worse. So Alabama's got deep, deep issues, like deep issues. And this is shaping up to be their worst year since probably since 2010.
So what you're saying is
the year after they won their
first. What you're saying is Nick Saban is washed up.
All I'm saying is that he needs to be fired today. That's all I'm basically. Look, like he's got to bear some blame for it. I don't know what the situation is. I don't know if maybe the portal has evened the playing field a bit for teams and made it harder. I don't know to keep and maintain or retain or acquire the certain talent that you need. I just know that you went into this season thinking that a Georgia transfer at receiver is going to be your dude, and he's not. And they don't have the weapons. They don't have the personnel. And Bryce Young is so good.
He's amazing.
We need to just say he is better this year than last year. He's operating at a different frequency. Like, his ability to make plays this year with no one really around him other than Gibbs is unbelievable. And he's getting no help. And it's a shame because he's putting up a pretty historic season that would win a Heisman.
It's crazy basically to think that Bryce Young, as good as he's been last year and this year, is going to be the quarterback who doesn't win a national championship at Alabama. I mean, that's crazy. But it's true. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to. I mean, they're done. And your eyes are not lying to you, right? I've heard people say, well, you know, they lose by three at Tennessee, you know, and they screwed up the end of the game, time management, and missed a field goal, and they shouldn't have lost that one. And that's true. And, you know, they lose on a two-point conversion at LSU. So they could certainly be sitting here at 9-0. But your eyes aren't lying to you, man. They should have lost to Texas. They could have lost to A&M, you know, goal line stand. Like, water finds its level when you're in four games that come down to one play. You're not going to win them all, and you're not going to probably lose them all. It's going to be about 2-2, and that's where they are, right? So their best win this year is that Texas win. And Texas is, you know, bottom end of the top 25 type of team. This Alabama team is where they are because that's what they deserve. And there are cracks. I'm not going to sit here and say that Nick Saban's done or that, you know, it's over. Done that before and been wrong. But it's going to end at some point. It's going to end at some point. It's going to fall apart at some point because it has to. It doesn't go on forever. None of us go on forever. I'm worried because this is not the standard of football that they should be playing based on the talent they have. And I'm worried because, like you said, they're in this position despite the fact that their quarterback has been amazing. Like, if it wasn't Bryce Young and it was Milroe in there, what would the record be? It'd be bad. It'd be really bad.
Yeah.
So, they're 12-point favorites at Ole Miss this weekend. Why?
No clue.
They're gonna lose to Ole Miss. They're gonna lose to Ole Miss this weekend.
12-point favorites is a lot. Why are they number nine in the?
Why? They're not good.
It's just a setup. You just don't want to have your potential SEC champions like number 14 going into the end of November. You know what I mean? You just got to keep them in the ballpark. But they have no business being number nine. Not that it matters. Not that anyone cares. But Clemson at number 11, or number 10 right behind them. Clemson's best win is better than theirs. NC State, their loss is better. I mean, they have fewer losses, rather. They have more wins against better teams. So I don't know why, but still, Alabama, they don't look, play, smell, touch anything like the number nine team of the country whatsoever. If you had put Auburn jerseys on them. This is like number 23, number 22 in the country.
Well, since you mentioned Clemson, let's go there. Let me just say thank you, Notre Dame. Thank you, Marcus Freeman, for delivering that 35-14 win over Clemson. And I don't say that with any malice toward Clemson or to Dabo Sweeney or anybody associated with that program. But I don't think anybody wanted to watch that team go into the college football playoff and play Georgia, because it would be ugly.
Yeah, that would be not for children. Definitely, that would definitely be the late game, hopefully, and keep the violence off our TV screens. I didn't want to see Clemson in it. I still think they can get in it.
I don't think they can. I don't think they can.
I think they can. Well, I mean, it's not like as easy as TCU getting in. Obviously, TCU's got a very clear path, but Clemson could get in with a little bit of help.
I would take Tennessee over Clemson.
I just hope they are better by that.
I would take Tennessee over Clemson.
You think a 12-1?
Yes. I think Tennessee over Clemson any day of the week. I think Tennessee would smoke Clemson.
Would you take it for competitive purposes, or would you think the committee would take 11-1 over 12-1? From the ACC, knowing the ACC's not good.
I think their resume's better. I think their team's better. Period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Clemson has done this to themselves. And my point was, like, basically, if they do backdoor into this thing, they better be ready, because the performances that they put together in, like, all season, since the start of last season, those performances, if they walk into a Georgia game or an Ohio State game or even a Michigan game like that, I would be very concerned.
All right.
That it could get out of
hand. Let me ask you this question. Dabo Sweeney is like in his like mid-50s or early 50s, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take over under 0.5 national championships for Clemson the rest of Dabo Sweeney's career, over or under?
Over.
You would take over. You think he's going to win another one. I don't.
I absolutely do. I think he'll win one more. Look, what he needs, like if you take, I think Clemson needs to take a step back and think about who's around him, who's on his staff, and maybe you could use an upgrade, and you could bring Jeff Scott back, and maybe that would help things out a little bit. If you look at the team itself, in a lot of ways, in a lot of positions, it looks like the vintage Clemson teams that we've known. Quarterback sucks. I'm sorry, that's really harsh. Quarterback play has not been good enough. Receiver play is abysmal, atrocious, just ridiculous. I once saw Dabo Sweeney do a wide receiver presentation in Connecticut at a coach's clinic. He talked about how to coach receivers for legitimately over 2 hours. The guy knows receivers like Bill Gates knows computers. There's no excuse for this, how bad they are at wide receiver. But if you address those two spots, I think they could win. Just like get Trevor Lawrence back, get your receivers back, this team could win a national championship. So I think that he wins one more. One more. I don't think he wins two more, just one.
I feel like I know Dabo pretty well. I mean, I was on the Dabo train before they started to really have it rolling at Clemson, because I saw what was happening.
Dabo hipster is what you were.
I was. I saw it coming. I saw the rise. I was very clear-eyed about what I was looking at. I thought it was all coming together. Even when they were getting their ass kicked every year by Florida State, I was like, they're right there. I think since they've won those championships, I think Dabo has changed. I think success has gotten in his head. I think he's become more stubborn. I think he's become more doctrinaire. You like that word, doctrinaire? And I think it's hurt him.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I think it's hurt him, because if you look at history, when did things really start to turn at Clemson? It turned when he went outside to bring in Brent Venables and to bring in Chad Morris. Now, people make fun of Chad Morris now because of what a disaster he was at Arkansas. But, you know, offensively, like, Chad Morris put in a system at Clemson that helped win them a lot of games. And by the way, he recruited Deshaun Watson. So, you know, that was a pretty big hire in Dabo's career.
Chad Morris is easily one of the most impactful assistant coach hires of the last 15 years in college football, for what he did and what he left in place.
But, you know, since then, what has Clemson done? What has Dabo done? It's all promoting from within. You know, it's all right, we've groomed these guys to take over, and we're staying in the family. We're not going to hire outside. And I think there's a lot of ego involved in that, to be honest with you, because I think it's Dabo telling himself, I made these guys, and I am going to be the one. This is going to be my program from who sweeps the floor in the locker room to who's making the call to spring Hunter Renfro on a 2-point conversion to win a national championship. That's, to me, that's where his head is at. And I think it's all about him right now. And I think the only way that Clemson is going to get back to where they were is if he's got it within himself to say, all right, I got to put my ego over here and I got to start making decisions that are in the best interest of Clemson and not in the best interest of making Dabo Swinney look good. How about that take?
That's a hot take. I think that if you are accurate in where he's coming from, and I think there's an aspect of that to any successful industry, any successful person, that you get set in your ways. If Dabo is that set in his ways right now, I don't think he's going to change. Like, he's just not. You're just not. You're not gonna rip up your blueprint and reinvent yourself. I don't see that. And also, does he really have the impetus to? You know what I mean? He does have full control of his fiefdom, and he's got, you know, his fingerprints all over a program that he built, that he owns, that is his. What is his impetus to make any dramatic or drastic changes? I mean, going 12-1, finishing fifth in the college football playoff, not making the playoff is going to stink, but I don't think it's going to cause any sort of deep self-reflection going into
next
season.
Right. That's probably accurate. And guess what? We're going to be right back here next year if that's the case. You mentioned Jeff Scott. He got fired at South Florida. Nice guy. I think he's a good offensive coach, but they lost a lot of games. They didn't win a whole lot. As Steve Spurrier...
They lost to Temple.
They got blown out by Temple. As Steve Spurrier might say, didn't win too many. Didn't win too many.
Nope. Definitely not. I think it was 4-28.
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
It was bad.
That's bad, Jeff.
I think he might have won two games against FBS, two maybe against FBS teams. It was bad. It was really bad.
It wasn't that bad when he got there. I think that's the problem. Yeah. So if I were Clemson, I would be happy to accept him back in a receiver coach role, not to advocate for replacing somebody else, but if a job opens up, I'm sure Jeff Scott will be able to get back into his old stuff.
All right, let me ask you this question. Why is Ohio State ranked above Michigan? I mean, I know it's 2 versus 3. I know they're going to play. We'll figure it out. But I've been watching this all season, and I'm not going to predict that Michigan is going to go into Columbus and beat Ohio State. We'll see when the time comes. Still got some time to go. But I've watched a lot of those teams. I've watched them every week, side by side. Ohio State has not played as well as Michigan. I don't find that to be a controversial take. And last week was just more evidence of it when, you know, it was 21-7 against Northwestern. It was a one possession game for a long time. They just could not impose their will over Northwestern. I know it was windy. I've gotten a lot of Twitter pushback from Ohio State fans this week about a tweet I had basically saying, Ohio State, dude, what's happening here? I know it's windy, right? It was a windy day. But, yeah, if it's windy, guess what? Run the ball, maybe. If you can't throw it, try to run it. And I don't know, if you need perfect weather conditions to get your offense rolling, it seems like a problem for a team that plays in the Big Ten. I don't know, maybe it's just me.
Yeah. Well, you could be playing on an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Indian Ocean, in the middle of a typhoon, with sharks jumping onto the deck, biting, snapping at your feet, and you still should not beat Northwestern by 14 points. I don't care what the conditions are. As long as Northwestern is playing in the same conditions, this should not be a 21-7 game that they were never going to lose, but still eye-opening how bad it was. The reason they're number two, Dan, and I'm fine with it, is because they beat Notre Dame. And I think that's a win now that separates them from Michigan. When you look at Michigan's schedule, it's just not very good. You know what I mean? It's just not. And no, it doesn't mean Michigan's not awesome. It doesn't mean that they're not very good. It just means their schedule is not very good. So I don't have a problem putting Ohio State number two. I just think you're looking more and more at a situation where Michigan could be favored in that game going into Columbus.
On
the 29th.
I think that's unlikely. I think that's unlikely. But
I'm just saying it's possible. The way Michigan has played, like Rutgers, okay? Rutgers is the Vanderbilt of the Big Ten. No, I'm sorry. They're the Missouri of the Big Ten. I think Nebraska or Indiana is probably the Vanderbilt of the Big Ten. But nonetheless, they're not an elite opponent. But like Michigan, what they did in the third quarter there, if you happen to watch it, that was really impressive, even against Rutgers. So I know I always say about Ohio State, as I did like 5 minutes ago, like when they play Penn State and they had that 6-minute run, I can't help but be super impressed by what they can do in a 6-minute chunk. Michigan, in a way, with less fireworks and more physicality and, like, you know, less of a highlight reel moment, they can do the same. So at the very least, we can agree upon this. Georgia 1, Ohio State and Michigan 2-3, 3-2, whoever you want to do it. Those are the three teams that have taken a huge step ahead of the pack right now. Maybe not a huge step, a significant visible step ahead of the pack.
All right, so let's say that Georgia just rolls, you know, the rest of the way, and they're the number one seed. Let's say that on Thanksgiving weekend that Ohio State and Michigan play a classic. Great game, and it comes down to a field goal. Is that a good enough argument for them both to get in? Or let's say Michigan loses. Let's say Michigan is the team that loses by a field goal. Does the fact that they don't have, you know, that marquee non-conference win keep them out, even if eye test wise, you know, you sort of feel like they're right there?
Yeah, I think their schedule is an eliminator. Do you agree?
I mean, look, here's the problem, and I go back and forth on this. I say this all the time. If Oregon had scheduled Georgia State instead of Georgia on opening weekend, then they'd be in the top four, and we'd be talking about them easily getting into the playoff right now. So yeah. I can't really, like, in good conscience say that on one hand, and then on the other bash Michigan for not scheduling anybody. Yeah, I think it would have clearly served them better had they, you know, and there was something that happened. I can't remember exactly what it was. They had a game scheduled and got out of it or something. I'll have to go back and look at exactly how they ended up in this place. But I don't know. Let's say that they had scheduled a home game against, I don't know, let's say, you know, Oklahoma, right? And we'd have been hyped it up. We'd have hyped it up, and it would have been a big deal. Would it have really made a difference in how I think about Michigan? Not really. Like the quality of their team. You know what I mean? Because they would have won that game, and it, you know, but it wouldn't have. Do you get what I'm saying here?
No, I understand what you're saying. I'm thinking from when I try to put myself into the shoes of a committee member or a committee as a group. I think there are like three types, or at least two types of candidates. There's the teams that you can't leave out, and they get lucky sometimes and get four of those. Usually they get at least two and often three. And really, there are the teams that you want to find an excuse not to put in to make your job easier, like just to streamline things. And I think Michigan's schedule, we all believe to a man, even in Columbus, that Michigan is one of the four best teams in the country. And that's really important. But they have a built-in excuse not to put them in at 11-1, regardless of what happens in Columbus, and it's their schedule. And I think that sometimes the committee needs those and really relies upon those to make it easier for themselves. So if it's 12-1 teams or 13-0 TCU against an 11-1 Tennessee against 11-1 Michigan, at the very least, you can be like, okay, we can put Michigan aside. We love them, but they just don't have the resume. Let's make it a little bit easier on ourselves. Just trying to guesstimate.
All right, let's move on to TCU. You've been the doubter. You've been the hater. You've said they're going to lose. They're now 9-0, getting closer and closer. But the next 2 weeks are that's the deal, right? They go to Texas and to Baylor. I would say the odds of them winning both of those games are under 50%. Well under 50%, don't you?
Yes, I'd say they are approximately in the 25 to 33% range.
Texas is favored this weekend by a touchdown, which I think just tells you sort of all you need to know about, I don't know, just sort of the overall vibe around this TCU run. But I still continue to say, like, they continue to win these games. Like, they've won their last three by double digits, you know, at the end of the day. Now, they've been behind, and maybe it hasn't been perfect all the time, but I have to give them a lot of credit for continuing to put these performances together. And like, I just can't sit here and say I'd be surprised if they beat Texas. Because they've done it every week, man. They've been good.
Yeah, they find a way to win. It's not always pretty, but they find a way to win. Just want to, like, we've talked about the playoffs so much, and we try not to lose focus of it, but just to reiterate a point that we make all the time, it's okay to just win the Big 12. You know what I mean? You were picked to go probably, I thought you'd go 6-6 back in August, and most people agreed. It's okay to just go 11-2, win the Big 12, or go 11-2 and play for the Big 12 title and go to a New Year's Six Bowl. That's an incredible season. You don't have to go 15-0 to throw a parade. And TCU is at the point where, like, if they just get to the Big 12 championship game and they get to a New Year's Six, that's parade worthy for Sonny Dykes. So, like, I'm a doubter because we're so hyper-focused on who can go and run the table and who can do this. TCU's having an amazing season. I hope that they're flying like planes with those long things on the back. Like, we love you, Sonny. Like, go, Max. Like, rah, rah, Froggies. Like, I hope they're really celebrating it because it's an incredible year. They're just not that good. Like, in the conversation of the Georgia-Ohio State class, they're not in that group.
Well, and when it comes to the narrative, I mean, talk about a storyline if Texas is the one that ends their unbeaten run. And guess who's on the Texas sideline? Good old GP.
He's going to be just an absolute battering ram if they win that game. Like, he's going to be a pinball bouncing around, like, jumping on people. He's going to knock people. He's going to clothesline Sonny Dykes. He's going to try to find. Not actually going to do that. But, yeah, he's going to be emotional, I think, would be the way to say it.
It still looks weird to see Gary Patterson in burnt orange. Like, it just is deeply disturbing. And I don't think I'll ever quite get used to it. But, I mean, he doesn't like Sonny.
No, he feels like he's a conspiracy theorist. He's probably a flat earther. He thinks like everyone's out to get him. He wanted to be the head coach of Texas so bad. He's like the guy from The Office where he's like, I'm the regional. I didn't really watch the show. You know, the guy I'm talking about, he's like, I'm the regional manager. And they're always like, you're the assistant regional manager. So Gary's like, I'm the head coach. You're like, you're the special assistant to the head coach of Texas. He got close. But if they beat TCU, he's going to celebrate like it's, you know, 1999. Right.
What would you say if at the end of the day at Nebraska, Gary Patterson is the head coach of Nebraska?
I would say things have gone
really
wrong.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
And this is not like I have spent a not insignificant amount of time with him. I know he can coach football, and I imagine he wants to get back.
You know he can coach football, dude. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to be in the College Football Hall of Fame.
He's got a statue. I think that nothing against him, but like,
it's just the timing.
What do you see about the end of his tenure at TCU that makes you think like, oh, just he just needs a change of scenery?
Well, like, I think maybe he got a little too comfortable, a little too ingrained. You know, it's like kind of some of the stuff we're talking about at Clemson. You know, when you say, hey, you know, it can't ever go wrong for a guy who's done XYZ at a school. Yeah, it can. Look at Gary Patterson. It can go wrong. They can run you out of there. I think he got too comfortable. I think he got too much power. I think he probably got a little too much ego in there. Was kind of just started searching a little bit, and it just got away from him.
Yeah.
They lost
track of who they were.
Exactly. Exactly. Sure. I'm not saying that I would do that if I were Nebraska, but I wouldn't discount the possibility there's a second run in him somewhere.
Well, how old is he now?
Let me look it up.
Is he like 62, 63, something like that?
Gary Patterson is 62.
Wow. Nailed it. Like 62 is not old in this current age of college football. I mean, like, no one is like, when you hire guys like, hey, we hope that he's our coach in 2062 when we play, you know, Space Force Academy, that's where you get in trouble. So I think that it makes sense to, you know, as if you're going to look at Patterson as a 6 to 8 year guy, being 62 does not preclude that. Yeah, like you said, he's a Hall of Fame coach. I'm just trying to think of, I say something has gone wrong about that hire. I think they can do differently than that, but it could obviously do a lot worse than that. You know, they could do a whole lot worse than Gary Patterson.
Okay, let's hit on the Pac-12. We've got Oregon at number 6 in the committee's rankings, USC at number 8. I think the USC ranking is does not pass the eye test. I mean, they can obviously score. I think, honestly, like, you have to start talking Caleb Williams in the Heisman conversation. You know, the defense is just why is Lincoln Riley like so tied at the hip to Alex Grinch? Alex Grinch had some good defenses like at Washington State. Ever since then, he's sucked. He's absolutely sucked.
Yeah, this year's defense is like, it is bad and getting worse. Like, I've watched them every week for 4 or 5 weeks in a row now. Their defense is getting worse. And I don't like, this is not like we've got to fire Alex Grinch thing. I just think this is totally personnel, totally depth. When they attacked this team and this roster in the offseason, they basically were like, what can we do to make my offense great and make my offense fun? And they did achieve that. But it's left some deficiencies on defense. I think Grinch, if you believe in him and you believe that he's had success in the Pac-12, I think you've got to believe that he needs at least one more year to see what the defense could look like with a little bit more depth. When it comes to USC as a team, like, I would have Caleb Williams himself like 19th in the playoff poll. He's incredible. The way he's been playing the last 3 weeks has been, he's lights out. And if you're on the East Coast or wherever and you're not staying up to watch him, I understand. I hope you get a chance to watch him, because he is, this 3 week stretch, he's playing better than any quarterback in the country, Hendon Hooker included. But this is a flawed team. It's a one dimensional team. Like, they're playing UCLA in a couple of weeks. UCLA, watching them, they don't have the flash or the style or the marquee guys, but they are such a better team than USC. UCLA is best in the Pac-12 on offense. Second best on defense by just like a hair behind Washington State in just yards per play. They're a better team than SC. And I am struggling to understand, outside of the Caleb Williams hype and appeal, why the committee has SC ahead of UCLA, let alone a bunch of other teams that are played better, look better on both sides, and have a better resume.
It's a fair point. Real quick, if you're an NFL GM, Caleb Williams or Bryce Young?
Caleb Williams. And Bryce Young is a special dude, and we've talked about him nonstop. I think by this point next year, when Caleb Williams is ready to go into the draft, I think we'll start evaluating him and looking at him as an equally good prospect. I just seem to like him more. I think he's bigger, he's a little bit stronger, and I think he's going to hold up a little bit better on the next level. So he'd be
I'm right there with you. let's hit on Oregon real quick. So they've got three games left, all against winning teams, all against, you know, good teams. Mm-hmm. Washington at home, Utah at home, and then they finish at Oregon State. I think people are coming around on Oregon now because of the way they've been playing. They're really good. Bo Nix, is Bo Nix the Heisman frontrunner right now?
I think that he's a finalist as of right now, you know, and if he plays well these last three games and then maybe he beats Caleb Williams and SC in early December, then I think he could absolutely win.
22 touchdowns, five interceptions on the year, 73.3% completions.
13 rushing touchdowns.
I mean, he's putting together a resume, big, big time resume.
Yeah.
And you know, like, it's funny. It's really funny. Somebody tweeted me yesterday when I was praising Bo Nix, you know, that this says the Pac-12 isn't as good as the SEC because he didn't do this in the SEC, which is hilarious because, like, you could apply this argument to anybody. Like, okay, Hendon Hooker was, like, just a dude in the ACC. He was like a middling ACC quarterback, and now he's – so what – does that mean, like, the ACC is better than the SEC? Of course not. Sometimes it's about system. It's about fit. And also, like, these are young guys. They get – better every year. Bo Nix has become, I don't want to take anything away from anybody who does what Bo Nix went up to Oregon and did. He became a great college football player.
Yeah. He's this year's Kenny Pickett in terms of a guy who had a really rough and tumble first couple years and then maximized his final year. Obviously Pickett, a little bit different because he didn't transfer, but Bo Nix being good at Oregon wasn't the evidence I needed to tell me the SEC is better than the Pac-12. I was able to figure that out. I was able to see that, decipher that on my own. Oregon, Dan, if they're 12-1 and they've beaten four teams that are going to win eight or more games in the regular season, don't know how you keep them out. I don't know how they get kept out.
Well, here's the thing. And again, we talked about the comparative score between them and Tennessee when they played Georgia, and obviously it was a disaster. And we know why it was a disaster. First game, new quarterback, first game, new coach, going cross country, blah, 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 blah. But, and I don't know how the committee is going to evaluate this. I really don't. But let's be clear about one thing. Oregon has better players than Tennessee. And they can thank Mario Cristobal for that. And Mario has gone to Miami and he has sucked. Like, it is going, and I don't want to spend any time on Miami. Like, it is going as badly as it could possibly go in year one for Mario. He did recruit very well at Oregon. Like, the reason why they're in this position is because he put together a nice roster, man. He put together a nice roster. I think Dan Lanning deserves a tremendous amount of credit. Kenny Dillingham, like, they're doing stuff with that coaching staff. I love that coaching staff. I love the way they're approaching it. I love the way they talk about it. I love the way they do it on game day. Like, to me, it's night and day, game day, between Cristobal regime and the Lanning regime. Like, I think Oregon is in a great spot. Dan Lanning has exceeded my expectations by 10 million, right, this first year.
Absolutely.
But when you want to loop it back to the playoff discussion, if they end up with one loss, the argument I'd make for them over Tennessee is not just like the wins or winning the conference championship. It's they have a better roster. They have better players than Tennessee.
I do want to mention the score of Florida State Miami because it was one of those games, Dan, where I followed it. I was watching it. And then I went away for a bit. And then I went back, saw the score, and had to look at the score again to make sure it was correct. They lost 45-3. They lost 45-3. Our boy, our young friend Mike Norvell, he's growing up so fast because his team is actually pretty good in year three. They're in the playoff rankings, so that's pretty impressive. Cristobal's successor, another young man, Dan Lanning. He has Oregon playing in a style and with a level of fun and just that I don't believe we've seen, and this is going to sound ridiculous, I don't think we've seen it since Chip Kelly. Even though those Helfrich teams were really good to start, even though they had Mariota that first year, I think Oregon's like operating at a level offensively in terms of their explosiveness and the and this their ingenuity that we haven't seen in maybe a decade, close to a decade at that program. So don't know if you caught his like very lengthy run-on paragraph about the Auburn job yesterday. Not about the Auburn job, but about being asked about whether he'd be interested in other jobs. Did you happen to catch that?
I did.
The grass is damn green in Eugene. Needs to be on a sweatshirt or on a t-shirt or something like that.
It's a great line.
I don't wear school paraphernalia, but it's a great line. I would think about wearing that on a t-shirt or a sweatshirt. So he's done awesome. I hope he sticks around. Pac-12 needs guys like him to lift up the conference.
So when you're in my position, your position, we meet a lot of coaches. We talk to a lot of coaches. And you have to sort of sometimes be very discerning about forming impressions based on how they interact with you. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you can get conned. You know, and these guys are salesmen. Coaches are salesmen. College coaches are salesmen. It's part of their job, right? And, you know, sometimes you can get conned. I met Mike Norvell, I remember very vividly. So I can't remember what year, it might have been like 2015, 2014, whatever year Notre Dame went to Arizona State and Arizona State crushed them. You remember that game?
Mm-hmm.
And then Brian Kelly threw everybody under the bus afterwards.
Yeah.
So I stuck around in Tempe and like did a thing on Monday with Todd Graham, and Mike Norvell was the offensive coordinator. And that was the first time I'd met Mike. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, yeah, he's got it, man. This guy's got it. There are other coaches where you meet him the first time and you know they don't have it. And like one example is Butch Jones. Like I knew Butch didn't have it and he was trying to have it. He was trying way too hard to have it.
Yeah.
And I knew he didn't have it. Like Norvell, like I was like, this guy's got it, man. And I actually tweeted, this was one of my great all-time tweets, when the Memphis job came open, when Fuente went to Virginia Tech, I tweeted, like, Memphis should hire Mike Norvell. Because I felt like that was the kind of job he was going to get. And it wasn't like Arizona State. They weren't like a top 10 team, you know, or anything like that. So it was a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a reach, but, like, it took some, you know, some vision. And then he goes to he ends up getting the Memphis job, which is wild, and he crushes it. And it's taken them a little bit of time, but like they've got to recruit better. They've got to do a better job in state at Florida State. They should. Like, I don't understand why they wouldn't. Tallahassee, to me, is one of the great recruiting situations because you're in the state of Florida. You're also right on the border of South Georgia. There's a ton of talent in South Georgia. If you go back and look at the team that won the title under Jimbo, a lot of those guys were from South Georgia. And you're obviously, you know, it's hard to go head-to-head and beat Georgia on in-state kids, but you can do that. You can go into Orlando. You can go to Jacksonville. You've got – it's a great college town. You know, you've got FAMU right there. It's right. Like there's a lot to recruit to, I think, at FSU. We've seen that over the years. I think they can do better. I like what I'm seeing. It's not there yet.
Yeah, it's a team on the rise.
On the rise. And boy, did they make a statement against Miami last weekend. Goodness gracious.
Yep. Not good, Mario. But yeah, they're a team and a coach and a program on the rise. So I would guess that within 2 or 3 years, they're ACC champs based on the way that they progressed in the last 12 months. Based from last season to this season, it's been a really noticeable improvement, both sides.
All right, so let's run down this week's games. The noon window, kind of loaded a little bit. You've got Missouri-Tennessee, which is going to be a CBS noon game, which is unusual.
What's up with that? They have something else going on during the day. They've got something stupid.
Well, no, they've got Alabama-Ole Miss at 3:30. So I don't know. What I'm seeing, it says okay. CBS. So interesting on Tennessee, like. And I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I've seen over the years a lot of teams sort of get to, you know, surprisingly get to 8-0, 9-0, and then they lose that first game, and then it's like, it regresses hard back to the mean and they lose a game you don't think they're going to lose. Not saying it's going to happen to Tennessee. It is at home. But I just want to put a little bit of a pin in that. Like if Missouri – if we're looking up and Missouri's winning by 7 in the fourth quarter, just remember I said that.
Put a pin in that. I agree.
LSU's got to go to Arkansas. LSU's only a 3-point favorite. LSU – Arkansas got crushed by Liberty last weekend. Shout out to Hugh Freeze. Is there going to be an LSU hangover?
This is a game they could lose. I said it before. Like we have this is not like anti Brian Kelly or anti LSU whatsoever. You cannot look at that team, regardless of the nice wins they've compiled recently, and just be like, "Oh, okay, they're gonna roll over the Hogs." I mean, give me a break. Arkansas could easily win this game, 100%. In fact, yeah, Arkansas is gonna win this game.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. I'm going to make that my bold prediction this week, too. And I'm going to send that to Eric Smith on time this week.
All right. So if LSU does lose that game, then that puts the spotlight on Ole Miss at 3:30 hosting Alabama, because what Ole Miss needs to get to the SEC championship game, by the way, Ole Miss is the only SEC West team that has never been to the SEC championship game. If LSU loses one, that puts Ole Miss in the driver's seat in terms of controlling their own destiny. Now, they still have to beat Alabama. They still have to beat Mississippi State. But, boy, that would sure make that 3:30 game awful interesting.
It sure would. And you've said that you're shocked. No, let me backtrack. You're not just surprised Alabama's minus 12. You think Ole Miss
I think Ole Miss is going to win. Alabama, what have we seen from Alabama on the road that would make us think that they're going to go into Oxford and win?
Yeah, I think that's the big deal for me is it's a road game. Ole Miss would need to really find something on offense beyond just running the ball 60 times a game. I love the fact that they've evolved and adapted and had a lot of success. Tremendous credit to Kiffin and his staff for like just changing things up so they could match their personnel. They're a little bit stodgy. I don't know if they're going to go toe-to-toe if Alabama finds success on offense. Bryce Young should have a big day. So I think Alabama wins, but I don't think it's going to be like by such a margin or by such a result that you're like, okay, let's buy back into Alabama again. I don't think it's going to be like
that. The last time I heard stodgy was on the Great British Baking Show, sometimes used as an adjective that Paul Hollywood throws when, you know, the cake's a little too dense.
It's stodgy. It actually sounds like some sort of British pastry. It's like hard. It's got some nasty little cream in it or something like that. I like that show.
I like it too.
The reference did not go over my head. I like that show. It's very, very – like when they – sometimes I'll put that on our local PBS or something like that, and they'll like – the music will play as they go through this English countryside and the tents are there. It's just all very calming. It's basically – meditative television.
Yeah, the thing I like, to me, it's like this running joke because all the contestants act like Paul Hollywood is like this big ogre who is going to come in and rip their head off for getting something wrong. And like, I don't know, the harshest criticism he ever gives anyone is, it's such a shame, such a pity.
A little dry. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, that's the difference between us and them. We're
more direct.
We've spent like a significant amount of time. We've spent more time ripping on Mario Cristobal today than he has spent ripping on someone's puff pastry in the history of the television show.
All right. So Louisville is 6-3. They're at Clemson. Clemson's 7-point favorite. I don't know. Louisville's playing pretty well. Could be an upset there.
Yeah. 7 points feels about right.
Big,
not more
big one at 3:30 in the Big Easy. UCF, they're number 22 in the poll. Tulane's number 17 in the committee's poll. Tulane trying to get that group of five spot in the Access Bowl. Tulane's a 2-point favorite. What do we think?
I hope this Tulane story continues. Tulane being good is a really cool story. They went 2-10 last year. They haven't been this much of a national factor since 98. Sean King and Rich Rod. I hope Tulane wins. I have a really hard time picking against UCF. I think they're surging. And look, like, if UCF wins this game and gets to the playoff or gets the New Year's Six, that's three different coaches in a...
Yeah, like 7 year span.
Six or seven season span to take their team to the New Year's Six. That's really remarkable.
It would be.
Really incredible. Yeah, but I'm going to take UCF, and not with my heart. I hope Tulane wins, but I think UCF does.
Okay, I can get on board with that. I'm gonna take Tulane. Georgia's going to Mississippi State, and we'll see what happens. Mike Leach is a total weirdo and weirded out again this past weekend, folding up the chairs and bringing back fat little girlfriends, and he's going to get crushed by Kirby Smart.
You know, it's funny, when Mike Leach used to do that thing, the Mike Leach thing, it would be like the biggest, it'd be like a meme. It would just be like shared around. It would just be a huge deal. Like, we had a Mike Leach infatuation for years.
You might have.
You did not. We as a culture. I did not. I saw him drink beer with ice one time, and I lost my
infatuation. I can vouch for that because I was there as well. He did. He put ice in his Miller Lite. The dude, he put happens. Ice in his Miller Lite.
And there was no response to that. It's just a funny, you know, it's not like it's gotten, you know, people dislike Mike Leach now. What's any more or less than they used to. I just think that like curmudgeonly stuff, like with the one-liners.
It's gotten old.
It's just gotten old. Yeah, I just don't think people are that into it anymore.
All right. Oregon hosts Washington. I like the Ducks. We agree there. They're 13.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I like the Ducks. Yeah, favored by a lot. And I was shocked by that just because this is a rivalry game. As good as Oregon has played, Washington has shown that they can score points, that they can attack teams through the air. They've got a really nice offensive scheme that has worked well with Michael Penix. So I thought 15.5 was high. But still, Oregon, I think they really would need to stub their toe right now to lose this game.
Kansas State Baylor should be a good one in Waco. Baylor's 2.5-point favorite. I will take Baylor. TCU Texas, 7:30 ABC. I think did you already say you're taking Texas?
I think I'm going to take Texas. I think I am. I think we're going to know early, though. You can tell a lot about Texas just based off like your early impressions of Quinn Ewers. And if he's on point and in control, like through the first three or four possessions, I think you get a good feeling about Texas. When he's off, as he was a few weeks back, it's a totally different situation. But I think Texas wins this game and ends and knocks TCU out of the top four.
Texas likes to blow leads, and TCU likes to come from behind.
Great points. That's a great point. Yeah, that's
so. Don't get too comfortable if Texas is ahead by two touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas State was up 28-10 a few weeks back, and TCU won. That's a great point. That's strength against weakness. Usually, the strength wins.
Also at 7:30, Wake Forest hosts North Carolina. The Tar Heels are 15th in the committee's poll. Quietly 8-1. Very quietly 8-1. I kind of think North Carolina is going to win the ACC.
Ooh, that would be awesome. I think at least on Saturday, look for like this is 45-41 kind of game to me. This should be a lot of fun. The Wake Forest can't stop committing turnovers, but if they stay clean, I think they can easily win this game. Just outscore them, like win 48-46 or something.
Drake May versus Caleb Williams for the 2023 Heisman. What do you think?
Yeah, that's how it's going to look going into the year for sure. Drake May, he's a future number one pick. I mean, that's how it's looking to me. Not number one overall, maybe, but he's a future franchise quarterback draft pick. He's looked that part. And yeah, going into next year, Caleb Williams will be number one, certainly, but Drake May will be two, no lower than three.
And then not a lot to offer in the Pac-12 After Dark, which Chip Kelly this week incorrectly called Pac-12 in the dark. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, that's not right. That's not right. We're at the time of year when a lot of games occur in the dark. We're using after dark in the, like, you know.
It's a suggestive, sense. But they've got Arizona. Utah is hosting Stanford. Both those games are going to stink.
Yeah, those are both bad games. Pac-12 after dark. Pac-12 in the dark.
No, it's not it. Good. It's not it, Chip. All right. That's it for this week for us. Thank you for listening to the College Football Fix. We will drop new episodes every Wednesday going forward, discussing the latest news and poll results from around college football. Subscribe to College Football Fix wherever you listen and find more of our content on usatoday.com and the USA Today Sports Plus app. Thank you to Eric Smith for stepping in for producer Emily this week, for Paul Meyerberg. I'm Dan Wolkin. Talk to you soon.
The College Football Fix Podcast.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.